Welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. This is another podcasting interesting time series, and I'm going to briefly recount and analyse three stories that have been in the news and that are ongoing. Apologies for not putting anything out for a little while. The weather's been terrible for the outdoor podcasts, and windy and very, very wet, which is part of the reason, but we are working on our bigger projects, for instance, the fascism project and the What Is Reason project. I've been putting a lot of work into that. But we haven't gone away, so fear not. Okay, the three stories that I want to talk to you about are, first of all, the revelation that Brexit is by no means done. And secondly, I want to talk about the GameStop incident and the way that relates to the casino economy. And I also want to say a few things about an interview that Mark Drakeford, the First Minister of Wales and head of Welsh Labour, gave on Radio 4 Today programme a couple of days ago. Now, all of these themes have got one thing in common, and that they are revelations of the way in which things are not what they seem. In a sense, it's as though on a cloudy day the clouds parted momentarily and shafts of light came out the sky onto the landscape and revealed something that was formerly obscure. And that's a bit of a metaphor there. And what I'm saying is that certain ideological mystifications of the situation that we are actually in have been exposed by these events. And in a funny kind of way, all of these events, which seem quite disparate on the surface, do relate, and they relate through this momentary revelation of the ideological obscurity that's and mystification that's thrown over us, the general public. Firstly, get Brexit done. As you know, this was Boris Johnson's famous three-word slogan that probably won him the 2019 general election, because there wasn't much by way of policy or by way of manifesto put out by the Tories. They really just did a number on everybody with their social media and sloganeering. The truth is, Brexit is not done. And Anna and myself have been watching a German pundit called Mark Wesseling, and his channel is called Mark Wesseling on Brexit, and it's on YouTube. The nub of what this commentator had to say is that the agreement between the UK and the EU, the trade agreement, that supposedly came into force on the 1st of January, has still got to be ratified by the 27 countries. And various legal advisers to some of the countries, particularly Germany, have been tutting and shaking their heads and saying that this agreement's full of legal problems and imprecisions that will come home to roost in the future, and are perhaps leaning on their governments not to ratify the agreement, just on the grounds of legal difficulties that will almost certainly actualise sometime in the future. Now, the guy brings up the case of Canada. As we know, Canada has got a fairly new deal with the EU. But it seems as though there were previous attempts, or at least one previous attempt, to get a deal, and that this was vetoed by, wait for it, Wallonia. Now, Wallonia, you might never have heard of, but as an English person, but Wallonia is one fragment, a devolved part of Belgium. It's Wallonia is the French-speaking part of Belgium, and French-speaking Belgians are called Walloons, and the Dutch-speaking are Flemings. So you think Brexit's done? Well, not if 27 countries have got to agree, and that if one state of a country, and remember, like, the Germany is divided into, I'm not sure how many, Länder, you know, and it's rather similar to the case of the UK, where we've got Northern Ireland, Wales, England and Scotland. That there's a lot of devolution in Europe. Spain, of course, you've got Catalonia, Andalusia and so on as well. And then it's possible for even these devolved authorities to object to the agreement. So there's a fair chance that the agreement will not go through and that Brexit will not actually be done. Now, you've probably heard me say on these podcasts on numerous occasions, Brexit will never be done. When your biggest trading partner is only 21 miles over the water, and with which you've had a relationship going back 40, 50 years, a close relationship, and in fact in which you've had close relationship through war, trade, alliance, going back millennia, you're not going to ever be in a position in which everything between you is settled vis-a-vis international law, vis-a-vis trade, vis-a-vis cooperation, vis-a-vis military alliance and so forth. It's not going to go away. But it seems that Brexit is not done. So much for Mr. Johnson banging the drum for his accomplishment on that. So keep your eye on that. Something will happen, no doubt, in the future. The next item, the GameStop affair, is actually strangely related to the whole matter of Brexit, and I'll explain why as we go along. Okay, you're probably wondering what I'm talking about, even though this GameStop has been in the news and it's been mentioned in the US Congress, and every kind of pundit is talking about it in the papers and on YouTube and on the radio and so forth. And basically what happened was that Wall Street hedge funds have been shorting a company called GameStop. GameStop is actually a retail company that sells computer games, and it's been, as James from the internet says, circling the drain for some time. So it's not doing very well. It's, you know, it's losing money and blah, blah, blah. So the hedge funds have been shorting GameStop. I need to describe what shorting is to continue with this story. Now, shorting. You have a hedge fund, which basically has got lots and lots of money that very rich people have given to it to look after. The hedge fund looks after people's money. It hedges against risk. It hedges against loss. And they actually play the stock market with other people's money. And shorting is a technique that they use all the time for maximising profit. Indeed, all traders can avail themselves of this technique. But hedge funds do particularly indulge in shorting. So this is how it works. Imagine Anna and myself have got an hedge fund. And to short GameStop, this is what we would do. We would go to a broker. That's somebody who buys and sells shares on behalf of clients. And we would borrow 1,000 GameStop shares valued at $10. And then what we would do immediately is sell those shares for $10. Now, all of this is in the expectation that the share price is going to drop because GameStop is visibly circling the drain. A few days later, the shares have dropped to $3. At which point, we buy 1,000 shares for $3 and then give them back to the broker from whom we borrowed them. Now you think, you say, well, what's in it for the broker? Well, we pay the broker a daily fee because it's basically a loan, but instead of a loan of money, it's the loan of a share. So you think what's happened there? We've bought them for ten. Well, we've borrowed them and sold them for 10 and then re-bought them for 3 and given them back to the person we borrowed them off. So we've actually made $7 per share. And okay, some of that we'll have to give as the fee to the broker. Now, there's usually a time limit on this. There's you borrow it for a period of time, and after that period of time, you've got to give the shares back to the broker. So, if the share doesn't fall, as you fully expect it to, you could actually end up with losing out. If in order to give the shares back to your broker, instead of buying them for $3, they've gone up to $15. You've still got to buy them for $15 to give them back to your broker, because that's the agreement. So you're actually going to lose $5 per share plus the fee. And so it's a kind of gambling. I call this is one of the big features of the casino economy. It's kind of gambling. So but this is what happened in the real world. Certain hedge funds did precisely this played precisely this game with GameStop shares in the full expectation of making a killing on the fact that GameStop is failing as a business. And the reason why this is in the news now is that a Reddit, which devoted to small scale share buying and selling, small-scale investments, organised to buy GameStop shares en masse, millions of them, in order to boost the price, because you've got the supply-demand mechanisms going on there. And they were able to actually increased the price of GameStop shares by a huge factor, hundreds of percents of increase. So it looked as though that the hedge funds were about to lose money, and the end date of the short is looming. Now, to be a small investor, you can't just kind of float up at the stock exchange in New York on Wall Street and move in and start doing trades. But traders are licensed. They have to be bona fide financial wallers. The way little people buy and sell shares in small amounts, $10, $100, $1,000, is usually through some kind of intermediary. And there was an intermediary involved in all this called Robin Hood. And Robin Hood, as soon as they saw what was going on here, immediately suspended the ability for these small investors to either buy or sell GameStop shares. They basically just put a moratorium on it. So then there's a huge outcry saying, well, yeah, it's one rule for the rich and another rule for the poor. Because basically, you see that the system is immediately rigged in favour of the billion-dollar hedge funds and against the $10, $20, $1,000 small investor. And the thing is ongoing. It's ongoing. And there have been questions in Congress and so forth, and it's all over the press and all over the internet. It hasn't resolved itself yet. It's not clear just at the time I'm speaking whether the hedge funds are going to lose out or not. The SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, has weighed in today and seems to be taking the side of the small investors, because they haven't broken the rules. They have, in a sense, actually just said, well, okay, you keep giving us all this bullshit about the free market and about democratising finance and share dealing. And when we actually do it, look, you kind of stop us. When we actually play you at your own game, you stop us. And now there have been accusations that the Redditors are manipulating the market, but they turn around and say, well, what is fucking shorting? So we'll see how this pans out. It's kind of reminiscent of what happened in 1929 when small-scale share dealing was very, very popular. People just had the idea that I can invest $1 and get two. And of course, it created a bubble and an enormous amount of froth and inflation and unreal prices. And the thing was bound to cave in, as it did, with catastrophic results. The financial crash of 1929. And everything that followed from that, mass unemployment. And eventually World War II. So this kind of stuff does have very far-reaching consequences. The notable thing about this is that people acting together can actually challenge the billionaire. And they don't like it up them. The second thing to note about this is that the notion of democratising share dealing, democratising finance, is pure bullshit. And actually a company like Robin Hood is there to fleece the plebs of their dumb money. This is what they actually call it on Wall Street, dumb money. This is the people that don't have the skill set of these predatory capitalists on Wall Street. But can be persuaded that they might get rich quick. The reality is they won't get fucking rich quick, with very few exceptions. And they will, yet nevertheless, they'll buy into the idea. But of course, there's a kind of a bit of a double twist there. A lot of people have been interviewed who are doing this small scale share trading, who have joined in with the Reddit thing. And they, a common reply is to say, we don't care if we lose a bit of money, we can put in a few dollars. We're doing it. We're not doing it to make money. We're doing it, as per Occupation Wall Street, to take down the hedge funds. The other thing is that here it is. This is a revelation of how the stock market works. It's almost like overnight, a billion people worldwide have probably discovered what shorting actually is. And now that how the economy, on which all of our lives depend, is actually a casino and people are gambling with our futures. And we have seen this giving rise to pretty catastrophic results. I've mentioned 1929. The toy economy was taken down by current trade speculation. And then it was raided and asset stripped by global capitalists in a pretty horrible way. There are people out there, a small class of very, very rich people who are gambling with our futures. And this is at least partly exposed, as we now all suddenly understand what short selling is and how you can fight back. So this relates to get Brexit done, because you do realise, don't you, that the whole British economy has been shorted from the pound right the way through to companies that many of which are circling the drain as a result of how much more difficult it is to do trade with Europe pretty well overnight. So there's your connection. Get Brexit done is a part of the casino economy and disaster capitalism. So the third item. A couple of days ago, the Radio 4 Today programme, which seems to take a pretty conservative line on the news and seems to be sort of weighted towards pushing the Conservative Party and capitalism in the UK in the way it interviews people. Left-wingers and Labour politicians get a pretty horrible time. They're kind of interrogated in a very aggressive manner on this programme very often. Anyway, the other day they interviewed Angela Rayner, who's the deputy leader of the Labour Party, and they just gave her a really hard time. And I don't think she came across that well. She got kind of pushed up against the wall, as it were. In the same programme, they also interviewed Michael Gove. Now, they did ask him some awkward questions. They have to make it look as though they're being even-handed, even if they're not. But compared with the way Angela Rayner was treated, he kind of got a bit of an easy ride. He changed the subject without being pulled up for it, and this, that and the other. And you do see this. This programme, I would say, should be notorious for its right-wing bias. God knows how right-wingers in this country think that the BBC is a bunch of socialists. They've actually, the new head of the BBC, forget what he is, the controller or the chairman or whatever, he's a huge Tory donor and a right-wing arsehole. Anyway, the other day, I don't know whether it was the same day that they had Gove on, maybe it was the following day, they had Mark Drakeford on. Mark Drakeford is the First Minister of Wales and the head of Welsh Labour. And they interviewed Mark Drakeford about COVID, and the Welsh Government has just announced a 3-week extension of the lockdown. And Mark Drakeford, he's a funny fella, you know, because for a politician, because he tells the truth. If you ask him a question, he answers it. And because he's doing weekly press conferences, and he's amazing. He answers the question in detail, very often bilingually as well. If he's questioned in Welsh, he answers in Welsh, translates into English. And he's just completely straight down the line. He's very calm, very reassuring. If things have gone wrong or they've made mistakes, he admits it and says we should do it differently next time. And he was so straight in this Radio 4 interview that they couldn't find any kind of chink to play their usual games. Bear in mind, this guy's a Labour politician. They get no quarter on Radio 4 today. But the interviewer couldn't find anything. Reminded me of that verse in the Tao Te Ching, in which the Taoist is, you know, the Taoist adept is described as somebody who can't be successfully attacked because there's no kind of, it's not like the guy's full of armour, it's completely encased in armour, it's the opposite of that. But it's out of the fluidity that, to quote the Tao Te Ching, the rhino can find no place for its horn, the tiger can find no place for its claw, the lion can find no place for its teeth. And the guy seemed just come across as kind of invulnerable, but not through being armoured and tight, but through being completely honest. And it was rather wonderful, I think. I mean, we expect politicians to perform and to engage in rhetoric, and very often with scant regard for truth. And in politics, appearances are everything. But for Mark Drakeford, he's very low-key. You know, he's almost completely without rhetoric. It's obvious that the man's got political passion, but nevertheless, he's calm and reassuring. And as I say, just very, very honest. Now, I'm not saying he's any kind of saint or anything, you know, or that he believes all the right things, but this is so different from what we're accustomed to, from the Tories, from Boris Johnson and so forth. Who've got no regard for truth, never answer the question in any forum, whether it's Prime Minister's question time or in interviews. They're just evasive, smirking, rhetorical at best, have virtually no regard for truth. When they do open their mouths, very often it's lies that pour out, demonstrable lies. And if you watch Peter Stefanovic on Twitter, he's forever exposing, with chapter and verse, with good reliable statistics, the lies that Tory politicians tell, lie upon lie upon lie, day after day after day. When you see an actual honest, straight politician, it's a wonderful thing to behold. And they don't have to have loads of charisma. And they don't have to have a lot of skills in arm-waving and rhetoric and rousing people up. By dog whistling their prejudices. They don't have to do that at all. So that was just very, very interesting. And again, it revealed what was revelatory there is that our politicians really, really aren't straight at all. And that common sense idea that a politician has to be a performer, a rhetorician, a charismatic arm waver, a psychopath, is completely wrong. And we need to eradicate that idea from the common sense of people. Your politicians do not have to be psychopaths. Jeremy Corbyn can be both a nice guy and a very good politician. Mark Drakeford can be a very low-key politician and be a very, very good politician. We need to just get rid of the idea that that all that matters is the optics, as they call it. And this is revealed by that little bit of news there. GameStop incident, whatever the outcome is likely to be, reveals that the economy really is a casino economy, and has revealed the nature of this nasty trick, shorting. And the notion that get Brexit done actually has yet to be fulfilled has revealed the fact that the powers that be have prevailed through three-word slogans, and that Brexit isn't done. And there's a lot yet that might go wrong. I hope you found that interesting. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with more interesting times and with more podcasts on quite a wide range of themes. Remember to wash your hands, make knowledge great again, take care, over and out.